Oh, welcome to the OSCY PLC meeting. The day is Wednesday, October 27th, and it is currently 6:04 p.m. We're going to start with our first agenda item, which is call to order. We're going to go ahead and take roll call. I'm just going to go off of the list that I have here on my screen. Just go ahead and say, here, and then go ahead and then say what district you're representing. I will start with Peter.
Here, representing District 2.
Tanya.
Here, representing District 7.
Perfect. Ana Karita.
Hi, representing District 3.
Pacolia.
Hi, Pacolia, representing District 4.
Perfect. And I am Dwayne, representing District 3. Chairing the meeting today. Thank you for that, everyone. We can go ahead and start with introductions and announcements that anyone has.
No announcements at this time.
Perfect. Okay, thank you. Okay, and I'm just gonna go ahead and review the agenda. So we just did a call to order. Next, we're gonna have open forum. Then we're going to adopt the OFCY continuing of the PLC meetings via teleconference due to the COVID-19 public health emergency. Then the approval of prior meeting minutes from October 13th, which is our last meeting. The adoption of the OFCY strategic investment plan for fiscal year 2022 through 2025. Then administrative matters, general announcements and upcoming meetings, and then we will proceed with adjournment. Perfect. And then open forum is our next agenda item.
So for open forum, it's an opportunity for the public if they want to speak on any topic related to the agenda. If they want to raise their hands, the chair will call on them and give 2 minutes to speak.
We encourage this.
And yes, do we have any attendees who would like to speak at this time?
No hands so far.
Okay, then we will continue with the adoption action item, the adoption of OFCY resolution to continue conducting PLC meetings via teleconference due to the COVID-19 pandemic.
Co-chair, I don't think we've reached quorum yet, so we may have to
hold off on it.
Yeah, move past this item until hopefully another member commissioner arrives.
Perfect. You have five members right now.
Five, yeah. Oh, perfect.
Mm-hmm. Oh, perfect. Okay.
Well, I move that we accept we spoke on this the last meeting, so I move that we adopt the resolution that will allow us to continue conducting teleconference meetings until, I guess, this year.
Right, and I second that. We can move on to a vote. Peter?
I approve.
Perfect. Ana Karita?
Yes.
Great. And then Pacolia?
Yes.
Great. Perfect. That motion is moved. We have adopted that we will continue our PLC meeting to be a teleconference due to the COVID-19 pandemic. Moving on to action item number 2, approval of prior meeting minutes from the October 13th, 2021 PLC meeting. Do we have anyone who would like to adopt this action item?
I'll second.
Great, and we will take a vote.
Who was that?
I'm sorry.
Okay, thank you.
Great. Pecolia?
Yes.
Great. Tezion?
Yes.
Perfect. That action item is adopted. Meeting minutes from October 13th meeting has been approved. And then now we will move on to action item number 3, which is the adoption of the OCY strategic investment plan.
Did Peter vote on that last one, by the way?
I'm sorry?
Did Peter vote on the minutes?
Oh, I'm sorry. Did I skip over Peter? Oh, I think. Did I call your name first, Peter? I'm sorry.
No, sorry. But I also approve.
Oh, so sorry. Thank you, Peter. Moving too quickly there. Thank you. I think I got everyone. But yes, action item number 3, the adoption of the OFCY strategic investment plan for fiscal year 2022 to 2025 is our next action item.
So I'm going to go ahead and get started and present. And I think what needs to happen is that I will share some slides and give you an overview. This item was discussed at the last Planning Oversight Commission meeting on October 13th. At that time, the POC was receiving the overall, you know, a draft of the plan for the first time. And staff and commissioners have since been reviewing and conferring on you know, the plan and its presentation with the intent to move it forward, ideally for City Council's Life Enrichment Committee meeting, which would be November 15th. So after I go through and just an overview and try not to revisit things we visited too deeply, but, you know, certainly for the benefit of attendees and the public, I'll go through it. And we will have public comment. I think the proper procedure is to go through the presentation. You can make a motion then and then have POC discussion and public comment, or we can go through the presentation. You can have public comment and then in POC discussion and then make a motion. So I think we've done it both ways. So I'll just go forward. I'm gonna share my screen. Are there any questions as to what's going to take place? No. Okay. That didn't work. Hold on. Share screen. Keeps wanting to go to desktop. Ah, there we go. And go with so as everybody you were all aware, the Planning Oversight Commission has been working on the strategic investment plan over the last 9 months or so, starting in December when you did have a session to review the city's racial equity implementation guide and hear from the director of the Office of Racial Equity. And then at that point, there was quite a bit of work done to through steps with the support of consultant team, HTA, Hatchell, Tabernick and Associates, and as well Bright Research Group, and then staff as well worked to support the strategic planning subcommittee and to gather the information and to support the consultants to do the work that they did. So we're just going to go over briefly. What you see before you is an overview, which sort of starts with where we've landed, broadly speaking, with the strategic investment plan based on the Oakland Fund for Children and Youth goals. And those, as you know, are the legislated goals that we see in the City of Oakland Charter for Kids First, the Oakland Children's Fund. And so starting with the healthy development of young children, the strategies that we are focused on and OFCY will implement through this next phase, our social emotional well-being in early childhood and family resource centers and parent engagement. Children's success in school is also named in the charter. And here we have the four strategic areas that we anticipate being in the RFP: comprehensive school-based after school at elementary and middle schools. Additionally, middle school engagement, wellness, and transitions would be a focus strategy in this plan, and then high school and post-secondary student success. For youth development and violence prevention, that is as well is a real clearly stated goal in the city's charter language for Kids First. And here there's actual strategies that focus on youth leadership and development. Summer is broken out. It's very little bit more particular strategic area. And violence prevention programming specifically is addressed in this plan. And then for the goal area of transitions to adulthood, career access and employment for opportunity youth, and a second strategy would focus more on career access and employment for youth in school. And let's see here. Now, hit that button. We started the process with the strategic planning subcommittee developing language that represented the work that they see going forward with the three-year strategic plan. And all children and youth in Oakland will be supported by the community to thrive, leading safe, healthy, and fulfilling lives. As well, there is a mission statement which focuses on OFCY providing community-driven funding to heal trauma, advance equity, and elevate opportunity for Oakland's children and youth from birth to age 21. The subcommittee members, and I don't want to be negligent in failing to state who they are, because they really worked throughout the process to develop language and to focus in on the disparities data that was looked at in developing the plan. So that would be Commissioner Peter Lee, Tazian, Co-Chair Tazian, Kimberly Aceves, and Mr. Bill Riley. The guiding principles that were landed were also worked through the subcommittee. And here we have racial, social, and economic equity, child and youth development, collaboration, and community as the key sort of pillars and guiding principles for these investments in children and youth. The community engagement work then—
Sandy?
Yes.
I'm sorry, Leander, I would just, if we go back to the last slide, I just really wanted to point out, given what the attendees stated last week about really wanting to focus on, you know, Black youth and understanding the trauma, that when we were coming up with these key points or these four pillars, the racial, social, and economic equity was really geared toward addressing the trauma that impacts Black and Brown and youth of color throughout the city. And so I just really wanted to emphasize that those understanding the trauma and understanding the inequities that fall amongst those youth of color was the prime focus as we came up with these pillars and really thought through the language for the direction over the next 3 years.
Yes. And there's actually a little bit more. One of the changes that we did here that we wanted to address and highlight was that some of that seemed buried. And so that's definitely being pulled out in this version of the plan with additional specific language. And there's a slide in here that goes into that very much. So appreciate that emphasis. So community engagement sessions, we talked about at the last meeting. There were a number, including a youth forum and TAE forum, which focused on Black and Latino youth, family-focused and specific listening sessions through FRCs that tried to draw mom, parents, and African-American family members And then there was definitely listening through Reimagine Public Safety's Youth Advisory Task Force, in particular, those recommendations, and listening through the OUSD planning process, student and family-driven engagement and initiatives, including the student mental health work. And then with some landing on key community guidance for OFCY, and these are really sort of also foundational that came out of the various sessions in which over 300 community members were participated, and others I'm sure might have listened in on through our online, you know, send outs and meetings. So that was guidance around opportunities for mental health, well-being, cultural and gender-based spaces, restorative violence prevention, and trauma-informed programming, especially youth-led programming, fostering opportunities for youth, parents, and caregivers to be key decision makers and leaders, ensuring programs are accessible, including hours, language access, and cultural relevancy, and then supporting older youth to achieve stability as they transition to adulthood, ensuring support beyond the entry point for college and career, but also not always focused on college and career. Just want to emphasize that. And so holistic plans for employment paths, financial needs, and capitalizing on their social and emotional and community assets. There was a great deal of work in terms of reviewing the data on disparities, especially racial disparities and geographic disparities. Those persisting across a number of outcomes, including readiness for engagement and success in school, kindergarten readiness, high school readiness, and then schools located in neighborhoods with high levels of environmental stressors and students and families experiencing high levels of stress. Where that landed was very clearly on specific equity guidance that would focus on these very clear messaging across the strategies to prioritize funding to address the needs of Black and Latinx youth and families, and centering Black youth facing the greatest disparities to support youth of color, including API and Native American youth and children and youth in families with low income, to prioritize East and West Oakland, where we have the greatest numbers of these youth, and addressing foster youth exposed to violence, commercial sexual exploitation, housing insecurity, LGBTQ youth. So the CNA really focused on the intersection of these groups of youth and youth facing multiple barriers as Black youth having highest disparities in most of the cases, including opportunity youth, I think would be left that off here. But we wanted to pull this out. If you look at this version of the plan, this language has just been brought up. And that's a result of sort of feedback that it was in there as three or four points, but we want to name it for how it will provide the guidance in the actual plan for the funding. And so as a result, we land on funding allocation by goal area with the strategies under each goal area, as I've explained. And just calling your attention here to the overall estimate of $18 million, which is not an increase. It's holding steady based upon the revenues that the city has indicated for this period of fiscal year 2022-2023. So even though there is effort to focus on specific areas, to add specific strategies, and to address disparities, there's not actually additional funding. And that is important because OFCY is, of course, in these strategies, spanning a life course. It's a birth to adulthood, birth to a career. It's a strategy, cradle to career, and there's not actually more money. And even though we've gone through a number of processes, which and have the information on gaps and needs. This is the funding allocation that's most consistent with where we see existing needs, and as well sort of continuing what we know through evaluation has been solid investments in areas. So I will just now quickly, but I think it's important to point that out because we get a lot of feedback, and we actually are down from 19.8 million, which was what was allocated at the beginning of this prior cycle, so 2019 through 2022, to $18 million. And so within each of these goal areas, we're talking about specific strategies based upon the information and the listening and the alignment that has come through this process and the community voice around what's needed for family resource centers and parent engagement and the connections there to reach communities in highest need across using the stressor map and using the prioritization for communities in East and West Oakland, as well social emotional well-being in early childhood, that strategy being broadened to support more emphasis, not just on preschools and caregivers, but more broadly on family needs, and so that those investments can take place through other possible venues. And so we want to just basically tie that back. And some of what we've heard is, how do you tie that back to the disparities? And so here we see that we have disparities in kindergarten readiness. We have a need for addressing the collective emphasis on literacy and supporting literacy from early childhood throughout the educational experience, but certainly early literacy through third grade, and is a collective and community-wide goal and can be supported through OCY's funding, especially being driven by parent participation and parent leadership and even economic opportunities for parents through these strategies and through family resource centers and parent engagement programs. Access to culturally sensitive trauma-informed services is supported. And really, families are connected to resources and want to support through the strategy, parent leadership and advocacy for their children, school and health. For children's success in school, this is a huge area covering the comprehensive after-school programming and the programming at middle schools, which is necessary to support safe places for children after school, as well as that academic supports and enrichment activities, family engagement that can go on through strong community-based organizations partnering with Oakland Unified School District and others to support learning and social emotional wellness. And as is stated in the Oakland Unified School District strategic plan, joy in learning and joy in school and connectedness to school. So CBOs have had a huge role in that, and they continue, as we've seen through these past year or two, to step up and be partners in supporting learning for children and youth, as well as safe spaces. One of the changes that's added is middle school engagement, wellness, and transitions. And the idea here is to really focus more funding on more culturally competent programming to meet the needs of middle school students and to center the needs of Black students. Middle school is an important place where it's necessary to invest more and make connections to ensure middle schoolers make the transition successfully to high school, that they're ready for high school, and that they have engaging programming and wellness-centered programming. And then the high school and post-secondary student success area was really kind of focused a little bit more to include this support for wellness-centered initiatives at schools, wellness centers themselves and culturally specific programs to address equity, really support student mental health in keeping with what is going on through Oakland Unified School District and to provide that complementary support. This is also looked at as an area where it's possible to complement the work of Department of Violence Prevention, which is focused on developing school-based violence interruption services with OFCY's strong history of providing both youth leadership in that capacity, peer-to-peer support, restorative justice and wellness. And so there are outcomes, of course, that are really identified in the community needs assessment and racial equity analysis that these strategies tie directly to, from improved school attendance to improved high school graduation, readiness for high school, and student wellness. We don't have a great outcome for that to share, but I think that's a theme that runs throughout the strategies, connection to school and a school climate, because the environment is key. It's those investments as well that support the wellness of individual students. And then youth development and violence prevention. Here we're again leaning on the traditional OFCY strong suit of youth development programming and supporting youth leadership programming. Here we're adding violence prevention as a specific strategy area to have an impact and to expand restorative justice maybe in the community and to do targeted educational and prevention programming. And again, to support where possible coordination with the Department of Violence Prevention. With the intended outcomes to contribute to reduction in youth involved violence, reduction in youth suspensions, and increased connection to community and opportunities for leadership and all of the opportunities that can be provided through youth development as a strategy which can expand access to arts, technology, literacy. It's also a strategy which is known for being able to reach higher numbers of African-American youth and higher numbers of youth who are experiencing disparities because of the fluidity in being able to support specific programming for youth exposed to violence or youth who may be facing housing insecurity, refugee and immigrant youth, LGBTQ youth. So youth development has been a place where there's that, clarity and openness to receiving community-driven proposals, particularly for safe spaces for high-priority youth populations. And then for transitions to adulthood, this has strategies developed in the sense that it is more focused on both opportunity youth who clearly face disparities and outcome. And a second strategy would be focused more so on youth who are still in school with the high school pathways programs and connecting to industry sectors, doing the support for preparation for a job, as well as keeping employment that youth need, summer youth employment programs, and building job experience and skills. Both of these strategies are intended to provide more holistic wraparound supports to support, and particularly Tay youth, older youth, to make transitions and to prepare them for being able to succeed with an internship and to make next steps, as well as to be aware of the opportunities and their own assets and how well to support their outcomes. And so here we know that by supporting youth through these strategies, we can support reduced community violence, improve financial stability for youth, possibly improve financial knowledge and learning and connection, participation in workforce programs. And these sort of programs also would support the re-engagement with educational system for disconnected youth. And so here's sort of a little table we're working on it won't be in the plan, but it certainly sort of will reflect how these strategies will contribute to the sort of outcomes that are identified within the CNA and racial equity analysis. And it's through the evaluation that is work in progress, and that the outcomes and the demonstration that youth are better off through these investments and the racial equity outcomes will be captured. So that's just a brief overview. The differences between the strategic plan for this year are really pulling, what you received October 13th versus today are really related to really pulling out more of the equity framework and trying to make sure that that was really clear, because that work was definitely done. And it's a framework. It's a really sort of a big picture plan. It's not a very top-down sort of plan, but we hope that you have had a chance to review it and are open to further discussion at this point. So I'll stop there.
Thank you, Sandy. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Do we have anyone? Oh, go ahead, Tavia.
I just want to say that I am super excited about the work. I mean, I think when you're in it, you don't realize all that's being done. But now we look at the presentation. We've done a lot of work, so we should definitely commend ourselves for it. And I'm just really excited about that. And so is my hope that, community really pays attention to the focus that we have placed on all the various groups, the racial groups, is understanding that each ethnic group has different challenges. And though there's not a large pot of money, we're trying to stretch it as much as possible. It is my hope, though, that the organizations that will apply for this funding and look to continue receiving OFCY funding encourages families in a new way to really engage to support their youth, and recognizing that you can take a horse to the well, but you can't make them drink. And so you can have all these funds here, but if we're not encouraging families to really, really take advantage of those resources by making sure we have effective communication strategies and things of that nature, then this is just beating a dead horse. So it is my hope this year that understanding the issue that already exists and then the issues that have been heightened by the pandemic, that organizations really step up to that challenge to really engage families that are most vulnerable within our city.
Thank you, Tezion. Thank you. Are there any other panelists who have anything to say about the presentation? Any notes, feedback? Okay. I believe we do have one attendee who would like to speak.
Yes.
Perfect.
Let me make Alicia Contreras permission to talk.
Hello, everybody. This is Alicia Contreras, the director of the Spanish-Speaking Citizens Foundation. I just have one question, because it seems to me that, once upon a time, kids who were 18 would be able to dream and live somewhere else, not at their parents, and they could become adults at an earlier age. But it seems to me that in the new times, our newcomers, when they are 21, they are right at the time when sometimes they need more help. So I was hoping that the age could be bumped, like from 21 to 24. I think that's when I have seen that maybe kids are a little more prepared to keep going on their own. I'm wondering if I'm what other people think, and if OFCY have considered the possibility, or if there's any way that the age limit could be raised. Thank you.
Thank you. And I do believe we have two more attendees who would like to speak at this time. Maximilian and Princess.
Okay, Maximilian.
Hi, good evening, commissioners. Thank you for hosting tonight's event. My name is Maximilian Rocha. I'm the Director of Behavioral Health at UCSF Benioff Children's Hospital. So I want to send an accolade to the commissioners and the team for developing this version and also including a more diverse and equitable distribution of funds with a focus on race and equity. My comment is really about more on the actual service allocation, more a question than a comment. The question is the service allocation by service area a floor or ceiling? The amount you indicated is a floor or ceiling. The comment related to that is from my prior experience in overseeing as Deputy Director of the Department of Children, Youth and Families in San Francisco, City and County of San Francisco, we actually use, or they use an allocation strategy based on range. So for example, if you look at early care education, it will be a range of say $10 million to $13 million. In out of school time would be again, $12 million to $15 million. By deploying a strategy like that, the department was able to anticipate potential downshift or upshift of funding availability. So I hope you would look into that. The current fiscal year or current service allocation plan 2018 to 2023 is also using that funding strategy, the allocation strategy. So thank you for listening and good luck with the process.
Thank you, Maximilian. Thank you. And then I believe we just have the one more attendee, Princess.
Yes. Go ahead, Princess.
Hi. I just wanted to make a comment. Well, my name is Princess. I'm from like a violence prevention program from Oakland. And all I wanted to say was like, I appreciate like everything that you guys do when it comes to funding for violence prevention, because our community really needs it. And for you guys to be able to fund us, you know, like the needs that we need, it really helps us as a community, because like our programs are like more so like helpful. And me joining TNT was like the best, or Teens on Target, which is the program, and learning about the violence prevention and how it works, and just learning now how like you guys fund the programs was just very interesting. And it really like made me think like, you know, they really put in funds for us just so that we're safe enough to like learn about our communities and prevent violence. And all I just wanted to say was I appreciate you guys for funding us and just to just fund violence prevention in general. Like, not a lot of people can sit there and like be able to sit there and tell you guys, well, we're gonna fund you like this much because I want your community to be able to learn about, you know, violence prevention. And I feel like it's good for our community. Thank you.
Yes, thank you, Princess. Thank you. Are there any other panelists or attendees who would like to speak on the investment plan? Okay, Ana Karita.
I just want to say that I want to appreciate the committee for working on the strategic plan and staff for working on the strategic plan. I know you all put a lot of work into it, and I can also see where the initial conversations, where it is in the plan, that some of the initial conversations that we had like months ago. So I really want to just give appreciations.
Yes, thank you. Thank you. Any other panelists or attendees at this time? Okay, I think we have attendee AHC Oakland. Okay.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
Good evening, panel. This is Phyllis Hall from Attitudinal Healing Connection. And I also want to commend this committee for the balance that is part of the distribution of the money, the balance of your goals and strategies, because it's going full circle to support kids from beginning to young adulthood. I do agree with the idea of possibly adding a few more years beyond 21. And not that that's an actual service area for our group, but I do think there's a lot more needs right now based on what's happening with COVID, the job market and everything else. But again, these are tough decisions. And I do feel like this is an equitable process. And I feel like I applaud the committee again for doing this hard work and really coming up with some serious strategies that are universal and that will last for years, not just a temporary Band-Aid fix.
Thank you, Phyllis. Thank you. And any other panelists or attendees at this time? Okay. Thank you. So we will move to adopt the OFCY Strategic Investment Plan for fiscal year 2022 and 2025. Do we have anyone who would like to
adopt? Oh, moved.
Bill Riley, I'll second it.
Perfect. Okay, we can go in for the vote. Pacolia?
Absolutely, yes.
Perfect. Ana Karita?
Yes.
Peter?
Yes, I approve.
Great. So it looks like we have adopted, and I think I got everyone there. Yeah. Adopt.
Get yourself, Dwayne.
Oh, and yes, I of course approve it. Thank you. So yes, the OFCY Strategic Investment Plan for fiscal year 2022 to 2025 is adopted. Thank you, everyone, for all the hard work and effort there. Yes. Okay. And then I know some people have to leave pretty soon. So we will go ahead and move on to administrative matters with general announcements and upcoming meetings.
Before I log off, I just want to say if we could all just give Dwayne a thumbs up and a hand clap. This is his first meeting leading it, and he's done an amazing job.
Yes.
So go Dwayne.
Go Dwayne.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you. Still trying to learn the ropes, but trying. Yeah. Thank you. Do we have anyone? Can I pass it on to Sandy to lead the administrative matters? Perfect.
Yes. So yes, very much appreciate the leadership of this, of the strategic planning subcommittee and as well the Planning Oversight Commission chairs and co-chairs, and appreciate Dwayne for this meeting as well. What we have now is an opportunity to work with council members to reach out to them and so get their support around the Life Enrichment Committee meeting, which is coming up on November 15th. So that is, you know, a high, you know, high priority. In terms of the plan itself, as you've approved the plan, there are some, you know, like minor tweaking where we're saying, oh, we should have put this word in here, you know, or that word, which we appreciate the leeway to do as we move into, you know, move into the next phase of the work. But it is a living document, and it will be, you know, implemented through a request for proposal process. And so it's big picture and framing. So November 15th, again, would be the Life Enrichment Committee meeting. And we'll be reaching out, of course, around ensuring that the chairs and members, you know, we would love to just, you know, coordinate and make sure that you're leading the discussion. I would present, of course, but we want to make sure that the council members hear your voices, because you are representing all children and youth, but you're also appointed by your council members.
Sandy, I just had a quick thing. Would it be helpful ahead of that meeting if we just draft a letter that then is sent to all council members, maybe from both co-chairs, strongly encouraging the council to, or the committee to, you know?
Yes, absolutely. I think that would be helpful.
Okay.
We have, I mean, I think that's a very excellent suggestion.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I'll get something drafted and I'll share it with you guys and Dwayne for us to send ahead of that November 15th meeting.
Okay.
Yes, I think that's a great idea.
Okay, that's wonderful. In terms of other announcements, Mike, do you want to remind us of the upcoming dates that we are anticipating?
Yes, since we had two meetings this month, we will not have a regular POC meeting in November, but we'll use that date next Wednesday for the POC's evaluation subcommittee to meet. As a subcommittee, you can only have four members show up, because if we have five, it would be a quorum of the full body because of the size of our group. So right now we have Picolia interested, as well as the co-chairs, Tassian and Duane. So there's room for one more member. Last year, Anna Creta and Jorge served on it. I don't know. It's up to the chairs to appoint one more member. So there is, again, room for one more spot. We will send out the agenda and the draft evaluation report for just last fiscal year, 2020-2021. We'll send that out on Friday to the public. It's a public meeting next Wednesday. So our evaluation, independent evaluation group, Social Policy Research Associates, will walk through the evaluation in detail with the subcommittee and go over the highlights as a fund, and by strategy, and then at the program level with you, and answer questions that you have.
So is tentatively the next full POC meeting December the 1st?
Yes, and the next full POC meeting will be the first Wednesday in December, which is the 1st.
Great. Thank you, Mike and Sandy. Thank you for those administrative matters. We can, I guess, if that's all, move on to adjournment.
Thank you.
Awesome. Thank you, guys. Have a good night.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you,
everybody.
Congratulations, everyone. Good night.
Bye. Yeah. Bye.